On this episode of Narcissist Apocalypse Q&A, we talk with Renee Swanson about healing from covert narcissistic abuse. Welcome to Narcissist Apocalypse Q&A, everyone. I am Brandon Chadwick, and with me today, we have Renee Swanson. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Brandon. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you for being here today, Renee. And for those that don't know you, you are a coach, a group facilitator, and the host of the Covert Narcissism Podcast, which is devoted to understanding covert narcissistic abuse, its effect on the victims. You sometimes share stories like we do on our show, and you're big into healing through community, which we will be discussing today. So, Renee, tell us a little bit about you, how you got started, your experience with abuse, and everything to do with your show.
Okay, so I'm happy to do that. And I got started because of what I was living. Like, this was not expected. This was not an expected path for me. I didn't start it, you know, because of writing some book. I didn't get on a mission expecting podcasting. This came out of nowhere for me. The marriage I was living was rough. I was struggling in it. I didn't understand. I was putting in so much effort and energy into this marriage to make it work. We were raising two boys, and I was determined. I was committed. This was a marriage for life. And as about 15 years went by, I finally did reach that point that I couldn't deny how I was feeling anymore. How I was feeling was very broken, very small, very less than, pushed down, exhausted. And I started to research a little bit and started to see, okay, why am I feeling the way I'm feeling? And I ran across narcissism. And this actually started with a therapist that I finally went to a therapist. And within a few minutes of that conversation, he said, you need to learn about narcissism. And that started me on that, you know, that rabbit hole of diving in to learn about narcissism. And all of a sudden you're going, man, I can relate to that. I can understand that. And they're putting your life into words that you didn't have. I didn't have those words until I started reading and went, oh, check mark, check mark, check mark. These are the words. And so in, you know, you read it from books, you're back to the clinical side of it. But I thought there's got to be people out there that can relate to what I'm living. I can't be the only person in the world living this. So I jumped on Facebook and I started a Facebook group actually with one person, because you got to have a friend to start a Facebook group. Can't start a Facebook group by yourself. You got to have one person to start it with. So it was a friend of mine who, she didn't have anything to do with narcissism, but said, hey, can I start this group with you? And she's like, sure. So she joined the group with me, and I don't think she's still a member of it today, but then people started finding it. And people started joining, and actually created a little ad so that I could maybe find other people who'd want to join. And when they did, we started sharing our stories. It was so validating to me. I'm not alone. I'm not alone. There's other people who get this. And it started this mission of just, I want to, you know, validate their story while they're validating mine. And that trade-off was so powerful. And it just grew. It kept growing and it kept growing. And now today, that Facebook group has over 58,000 people in it. But that is a community where people are helping each other. And that just became an absolute mission for me. I am no longer in the marriage. That marriage has dissolved. But then I had a friend who said to me, you ought to podcast. You ought to tell people your story and get word out more. And that's where it started. And I just started creating this podcast, and people started resonating with it and the stories I was telling. And I shared my story. Like, most of my podcast is my story. But then it evolved, and now it's been other people sharing their story there. But as I went along, I got the emails too, where people are like, hey, you're putting this into words that I didn't have. And thank you. I needed words to be able to describe this. And it became such an integral part of my healing journey that I couldn't stop. Like, it just became a mission then, because every time I would put more things into words and people were resonating with those words, my healing just exploded because of the relationship I had come from. So for me, it was a personal journey from my background.
And what's the thing that surprised you of what you learned the most during that process?
The value of community, I think, has been the biggest piece of my healing journey, that I'm not doing this alone. I'm not isolated. And so with the podcast, as it continued to spread and more people heard about it and more people started reaching out to me, and then I created group sessions where we actually meet on Zoom in small groups. Those group sessions are some of the best friends now that I've ever met. Like, they're people who are being real and being genuine with each other. And so I think for me, the biggest way that podcasting has been such a huge part of my healing has been it's become a safe place for my feelings to be expressed, where, I mean, there's no judgment, no self-judgment. It's just being able to have emotional safety. And then within the community, that Facebook community and the people that are doing my group sessions, that emotional safety that none of us had within our home has been integral in the healing.
So you found, within podcasting and the community, you found your voice.
Yes.
And you started to be able to really express all of the things that you were not allowed to for a very long time, you know, and as your voice starts to be heard, no matter what you're saying or what you're talking about, there's just this freedom of taking your power back in that way and being able to be authentic in that way with other people and having no fear of saying how you're feeling or saying, I want to do this today, or, you know what, I'm not going to clean this thing today, and that's going to be okay, and no one's going to tell me what to do, you know, because I just don't have the energy. And to be able to say, I don't have the energy for this. So it sounds like you're creating within that community, the community is its own boundary space to feel free to have boundaries, to go in and out in the community and be who you are and be involved. But then some days it's okay to not be involved and to be okay, and to be okay with that.
Absolutely. There's an element of safety that is so needed in our world. And it's not, when you're dealing with covert narcissism, it's not so much about physical safety as it is about emotional safety, which has a physical element to it. So there is, you know, an emotional threat definitely has a physical element within inside of you. There's no way you can't say it's not physical. But I think of the analogy of, if you've got a youngster at school and he is not feeling safe sitting in his chair, trying to learn multiplication tables from his teacher, but he's not feeling safe. Maybe that threat is a bully that's sitting beside him. Maybe that threat is because of, you know, abuse that's going on at home. And so he can't drop the hypervigilance. And so he's not feeling safe, or he's, you know, afraid of a shooter coming in the school because of a news story he heard. So you've got this child sitting there not feeling safe. That child's not going to learn the multiplication tables right that minute. You can't, because you're so focused on that lack of safety, and it interferes with any ability to learn and grow. So you take that child and you put them in an environment where they can drop their guard. They can relax. They can drop the hypervigilance. They can trust. In this environment now, their growth and their learning explodes. Okay, all of a sudden now they can grasp, oh, these multiplication tables really weren't that hard. You know, all of a sudden, academically, everything is clicking for them. Socially, they're going to be more comfortable because the guard is relaxed and they're able to connect now with other people. The same thing is true of somebody who's living in a narcissistic relationship. You aren't safe. You are not emotionally, psychologically, mentally safe. Your system knows that. So the guard is up. Well, your growth and your learning at that point is very limited. As you leave these relationships, if you continue the hypervigilance inside your own head, which you do, it's very common for quite a while, that hypervigilance still interferes with your growth because you haven't figured out how to relax yet. You know, covert narcissism gets inside of you and you start judging yourself. You start, you know, guarding against yourself. You start gaslighting yourself. So as you start to find your community where you can put that guard down, where you can hear a story and go, oh my gosh, I understand that. And you share your story and nobody's judging you. You start learning to put your own guard down. And as you do, your own self-judgment goes down and down and down. All of a sudden, your learning and your growth explodes because you found safety. So finding that group, that community, that space, that coffee shop, whatever it is, that friend, that family member, whatever it is, where you can find that kind of safety is crucial when you're dealing with a narcissistic relationship.
And you have done an episode about the narcissist prayer. And that prayer is, that didn't happen. And if it did, it wasn't that bad. And if it was, that's not a big deal. And if it is, then it's not my fault. And if it was, I didn't mean it. And if I did, you deserved it. So for you, when it comes to the idea of covert narcissism, what does all of that encompass?
So all of that encompasses the way that everything from the covert narcissist perspective can constantly be shifted and changed and manipulated to make everything your fault, your job to fix, your responsibility, your shortcomings. Everything is targeted at you. So you deserved it, or you're remembering it wrong, or you're interpreting it wrong. Whatever it is, you are always the one that's wrong. They take no ownership, no accountability of their own. And so the only way this relationship works is if you're willing to do all of that work. When I look back at my own marriage and realize I was the one who was always giving all the way, like jumping across the Grand Canyon. He's on this side, I'm on this side. I have to go all the way across to his side all the time in order for this to work.
Were they big with silent treatments?
So the silent treatment for me in my marriage was not days on end or weeks or months. It was these long, pregnated pauses within a conversation. And I mean long. We would sit in total silence. And that silence was just pounding. Like, it's just this incredibly loud silence where you're not allowed to twitch. You're not allowed to move. If I, you know, even got up to walk across the room, then it was, you know, hey, you need to listen to me. But it was these long, pregnated moments of just intense silence.
And did you think that you, at that point, that you had done something wrong? So now you're going to be caretaking because of that silence?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now it was my, you know, that silence was my mind on hyperdrive of what did I do? What is he mad about? What did I say? What did, you know, and then how do I fix it? How do I fix it? Because everything's your job.
Is that like their biggest tactic? How to get you onto their side? So you're not thinking about yourself. You're constantly thinking about them.
Yes, because this may have started with a conversation of me saying, you know, hey, I really didn't like it when you got mad at me this morning or whatever. It may have started with something simple like that, but then it flips and it flips and it flips. And by the time we get to that silent pause, I am now working as hard as I can to figure out how to find peace. How do I make peace with him? How do I? And so I'm the one apologizing, even though I'm going, I don't even know what I'm apologizing for, but I don't care. I just want to apologize so that this will get better. So everything flips where it becomes all about what I did wrong. 21 years of that. 15 years is about when I've really started to realize something's really wrong here. And that's kind of when I started that research, but just in a little bit. So I'd peek in the door and I'd be like, no, that's not what it is. And I, because you can live in denial for a long time, and denial at the time is easier to live in than to face the reality of what was in front of me. It was easier to deny it. I can make excuses, stuff my feelings inside and deny. But if I faced it, it made it real. And that realness of it was too scary for me at times.
And when it came to your healing process in the aftermath, because 21 years is a long time, you know, within your healing process, what were your ups and downs like? And when you're dealing with everyone from your coaching practice to your group, you know, obviously there's going to be people in there that are going to get frustrated that, you know, some people's healing processes are different than everyone else. And I've seen it within the group that I run as well, that some people are kind of going, and, you know, and then you see people that are taking steps back and going forward and taking steps back. You're giving your best words of support during all of those times. So what do you say to people who are going through a lengthy period of the healing process, because there's just so much that is, like, I like to call it like a phone cord that's really tangled. You know, you're trying to unwind that cord so at least goes straight, but it's not going to be a linear process. So how do you help people through that process?
So one of the things that I tell people all the time is this is a very personal journey. Your journey will not look like anybody else's. There's going to be similarities. There's going to be stories that you go, oh my gosh, I think she's reading, you know, from my life, or she's a fly on the wall. And so there's going to be stories that are going to be very similar, but there's always still going to be a very personal element to it. And in that personal journey, you have to find what is the right path for you. And that's it. You know, if the narcissist in your life is going to be mad, whether you do it this way or that way or this way or that way, and keep going down that list of all the different ways you can try it. And if they're going to be mad, no matter which way you do things, stop trying to find the right way for them. Okay. Find the right way for you. But that's hard, because you've been living, for me, it was 21 years. I've been living for 21 years trying to find the right way for him. So to reclaim that for me is not a, you know, it was not an instant that it happened. It was, I kind of did, and then I didn't, and I kind of did, and then I didn't. And so it takes time to find that voice again, to find that courage, to claim your reality back, and be gracious with yourself while you're doing it. There's no magic answer that says, you know, a lot of people say, just run, just leave, get out of the marriage, run. But it's not that simple. And anybody who tries to tell you that it's that simple, they're not living your life, okay? And you have to find the right way for you. So the stages of grief in these marriages, you are grieving. You're grieving the loss of what you thought you had, okay? It's the death of who you thought they were, who you thought you were with them. So this is a grieving process. And the stages of grief, you know, denial, bargaining, anger, depression, and acceptance are not linear. You don't go from denial to bargaining to anger to depression to acceptance. They're all over the place. One day you might be, you know, in denial, but then all of a sudden you're angry. And then now I'm bargaining, trying to take responsibility, but now I'm depressed. And then I accept it just a little bit. Nope, I'm back in denial. And then it's all over the place as you go through this process. And there's no magic answer as to the length of time that should take. So let go of that imperative thinking. There's no should, there's no must, there's no, you have to find the right path that's for you. But in order to do that, you have to start listening to your heart again. which means get all of the hypervigilance off, get all the overthinking and overanalyzing off of you so that you can start listening to your heart once again.
Yeah, I find that the people that come in to some of these relationships that are perfectionists have a very difficult time in the aftermath because, one, they're dealing with, in their mind, like a failure. And then the grieving process becomes its own battleground of there has to be a specific way, or I have to do it this way. And they have to kind of find themselves through that. And we're dealing with so many people that have been told that they're not good enough for a very long period of time. So there's a lot of, it's not every person, but a lot of cases go, or relationships go, where, you know, the abuser might be attacking their competency in a big way. That might be the thing that they know is going to really get this person. And that's what they're going to really start to chip away at, that they're not good enough, they're not smart enough, all of those things. So in the healing process, I find when someone has really not thinking that they're good enough and that they're not, the competency stuff has really been chipped away, that it's so ingrained in them at that point that when they're healing, those things are still there, that they're thinking, I'm not even good enough to heal properly. I'm not smart enough to heal properly, because the abuser has done a really good job of, you know, really eroding that sense of self. And that's why, you know, you brought up community, and we've been bringing up community and support today. So it helps so much that when you're in groups and you have other people around, and not just your therapist, if people are going to a therapist, because that's one person, but you have like a community of like different people who can point out to you like, hey, like, look at what you did here. Look at what you did here. And also, like, also within that community, you're not just getting help from other people, you're helping other people. And there's this building block, I think, of community and being in these groups where you might have been told for a very long period of time, as I said before, that you're not good enough, that you're not all of these things, that are not true. But now you're starting to help these other people understand those things. And those people are now giving you positive feedback that you are not these things that this other person said. So it becomes this like circle of healing and health, because you're now doing this work to prove this other person wrong, and you don't even realize you're doing it. But a sense of self-confidence and ability starts to be built at that lowest kind of level of community support, you know, to kind of springboard you back into the world after. And I think that's a thing a lot of people don't understand. If you're trying to, if you're out there listening, trying to battle this alone, doing it within a community, and this is what they say with like AA in like Alcoholics Anonymous, they try to get people who are addicts into community work and like helping other people to start building up whatever trauma they had been through that made them drink in the first place, to start giving them a sense of worth in a lot of different ways. And I think that's what your community in my community in my support group does, which is to, you're getting help, but you're getting help in two ways. The second way you might not be seeing.
No, you're very much so right with that. And it's a mutual, it's like completing the circuit of an electrical current. You know, when you're helping them and they're helping you, it's in helping others how much you end up growing yourself, you know, and helping yourself. And it, I want to go back to what you said about they chip away at your competency, which is 100% true. And as they chip away, though, the other piece of it is they are putting themselves as the higher you know, authority on knowledge. So they're chipping away at your competency at the same time that they're making you more dependent on them. They are the only person who can help you. They are the only person who you need to turn to for advice, and they isolate you from so many other people. So it's kind of a double whammy there, where you are feeling less than, and, you know, worthless and not good enough. And they are the only person that you can lean on to get help or to get, you know, more knowledge or to get more understanding. And they set that environment up. So when you get into a community where you're with other victims of this and people who understand it, then you have people who are not doing that to you. They're not chipping away your competence, and they're not putting themselves on a pedestal. Then it's a mutual place of safety. And that's that building block that you're talking about that just creates such a huge environment of healing.
It's huge. And I think the thing, how I explain that to people on my show is they do their best to become the truth teller in your world. And once they become the truth teller, they then are able to isolate you through their truth telling. And then once you're isolated and alone, that job has already been done, and now you're separated, and then they can slowly, you know, piece by piece by piece, start to chip away. Because when they're the truth teller and they've isolated you, then who are you going to go to? Who else are you going to listen to? They become the authority in your world, and, you know, you're now looking up at them, and they're on that pedestal. They've knocked you off the pedestal they've put you on at the beginning, which is how a lot of the time they got you into this situation. And then, you know, slowly that starts to go.
Yeah. And you are in the relationship and have no clue. I mean, so many people just have no idea any of this happened. And so you spend the whole time going, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? You know, what do I need to fix? Why am I so broken? And so people go to therapists and go to counselors to get help for themselves, not realizing that it's the environment they're in that is the problem.
And did you go to a therapist yourself after, or did you do all within the community?
I did go to therapy. I started with a therapist, actually, right off the bat, when I was not really even exploring narcissism yet. My friend had finally talked me into going to a therapist, and I was in his office about 5 minutes, you know, talking about my marriage, when he said, you need to learn about narcissism. You need to explore this word. And he was actually part of the integral piece of getting me outside of my own head so that I could see the situation a little more clearly. You know, if you're standing so close to a stained glass window, you've got your nose, you know, at a stained glass window, you can't see the picture. All you see is the color green in front of you. Okay. And everybody else is seeing the picture. But until you start to step away, and then you go, oh, there's a person. Oh, there's a field. You know, you can start seeing more of the picture. But when we're in these marriages, we are nose to nose with the window, and we just can't see it.
So what's going on with your practice, your groups, and your show in the future?
So in the groups, I do run group coaching sessions. I run them every couple months. We work for 6 weeks together as a group. And then, you know, we move forward to the next group. And those have been, of all the work that I do, I do offer one-on-one, you know, individual sessions, and they are very powerful as well with that connection. But the group sessions, I think, is where you get the most value because of exactly what we're talking about. You build this little community of people who get it. And so the group sessions are definitely, you know, definitely a huge focus for me. And with the podcast, you know, we're exploring bringing on different guests. I've really enjoyed getting some other guests. We did a Stories of Hope series just a little while ago, where I was having people share their stories kind of in the aftermath, like once they're out of the relationship and in that healing journey. So that's been really powerful. We're going to do some episodes coming up about parenting in these situations. I am going to be bringing some of that in, you know, here soon as well. So.
Yeah. The parenting stuff, you know, I am not a parent, and this is how I knew that something was kind of magical about how the show began. And it was about 4 months in. And before I went to bed one night, I said to myself, I need to learn about court. I need to learn about custody. I need to learn about legal issues, post-separation issues, everything, divorce. And I went to bed. I said that out loud. Or at least I said it out loud in my head. I went to sleep. I woke up in the morning, and there was an email from a former public defender in Seattle, and they were now a domestic violence, domestic abuse attorney and family law attorney, and that said, I listened to your show. You need me on your show because you need to learn about divorce. You need to learn about court. You need to learn about custody and everything legal. And then that brought in the aspect of the show of, and that was just kind of magical, but that brought in the idea of like, there's a whole parent world that's going on that I know nothing about. And it's not just how to deal with your ex. It's how to really help your kids who are dealing with so much and how to be the best parent you can be, even though you're triggered by a lot of things that are coming in, and you need to be the safe and protective parent. And that became like a big thing. And we've done a bunch of episodes with that. But I've learned so much, not just about parenting within these situations, but what it is to be a good parent as a whole.
Right.
And
right.
All of these little interesting tricks. So like if I see other people's kids, like my friend's kids, I know interesting things that they might not even know how to interact with their children, to have their children be free thinkers and, you know, have their own thoughts and how to get them to be their own little investigators and to really start to have problem solving thinking. So that gives them tools. So I found that also really interesting that in the offshoot of all of this, that I started to learn a lot about just parenting, even though I am not a parent at all. I'm just like the friend who's great with the other person's kids.
No, I think that's awesome. And I love to hear that you've, you know, have gotten on that mission. And I think that's great. I will say this, that, you know, as a martial artist, if I'm teaching a self-defense to somebody, if I am defending myself, then there's one set of skills, that this is my set of skills for my self-defense. But if I'm now in an environment where I'm protecting myself and my children, that's a whole different environment in regards to self-defense. And I now, you know, if it's me, just me without my kids protecting myself in a real world situation, I just have to get away. But if it's me protecting my kids, that self-defense becomes a lot more complicated because I can't just get away. I can maybe, you know, outrun this attacker, but my kids can't, and I can't leave them behind. And so it's a whole different set of skills that is needed when you now have children involved. So it does add a lot of complexity to the situation.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for being here with me today. And I'm going to put all of your stuff, all of your emails, all of your Instagrams, all of your podcast links, website links in my show notes as well. So just thank you for having this conversation with me. And for everyone who's listening, you know, it's, to me, it's like creating community of different shows, and everyone's show has value. And so many people who listen to my show say, you know, they still listen because they need to. They need to know that they're not crazy. And the more shows like mine and like yours that are out there, you know, the better. And, you know, some people say like, all right, you know, there's other shows. It's competition of your show. I'm like, it's not competition to the show. You know, everyone's going to listen to the shows, and yours is a great show. And I want people to listen to your show. As you know, there's people need healing and people need that community. So just a big thank you for being you and doing what you do.
Well, thank you, Brandon. And right back, you know, as well, that thank you for being here for this world. You know, there's so many people out there that we can't possibly be in competition with each other because we've got a whole world to help. And how can we reach out even more and more? So I thank you for that. We are on that same mission, and I think it's beautiful.
Well, thank you, Renee, once again for being our guest today on our show. And we'll put all of your information in our show notes for everyone to reach you. And if you want to be a guest on our Survivor Story episodes, you know, please do go to our website at narcissistapocalypse.com. Top of the page, there's a button that says guest form. When you click on that button, it takes you to our guest form page. And there you can read all of our instructions and either send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com or fill out our guest form and press the submit button. And please do send it in the format that we ask for. And if you are someone that needs support, we have a support group at our website at narcissistapocalypse.com. And you'll see inside that we have Zoom meetings every Wednesday night, Thursday afternoons, and Saturday nights. We have forum boards for you to post on to get the validation that you need from survivors just like you. It is a wonderful group of people on there. And you can make a lot of friends too. So if you need support, join our support group today. And if you need even more support, please do visit our friends at domesticshelters.org. At domesticshelters.org, they have articles and resources to help you make sense of what you're dealing with. They have every phone number, email address, and web address for shelters and agencies. No matter how big or small the town you are from, domesticshelters.org has it there. So if you need support, go to, if you need extra support, please do go to, I'm flubbing over my words. If you need extra support, please do go to domesticshelters.org today. And we have another friend of the show called Shelter Movers. So if you're trying to get out of domestic violence or coercive control and you need help leaving the home, getting all of your stuff out of your home, you can get all of your stuff into storage. Shelter Movers can help you at sheltermovers.com. This includes your pets and livestock too. Currently, they are only available in Canada. It is a donor-supported charitable organization. So if you need help from them or you just want to donate to them, go to sheltermovers.com. And that is it for today's episode. So for myself and Renee, we hope you have a good night.